I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Vincent Fenerty resigned from the Philadelphia Parking Authority right before he was going to be fired for two claims of sexual harassment. The agency had come under fire for its mishandling of these scandals, which date back more than a decade. Fenerty spent more than 30 years at the PPA, moving up the ranks to executive director. He will get a pension of almost $155,000 a year. Our guest Mike Newell, columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, broke the story, interviewing the two women who detailed years of unwanted and persistent acts of sexual harassment by Fenerty and the response or lack of response by the PPA board. He wrote that it's time for the board to go. And Mike Newell, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here, Mike.
Also with us is David Thornburg. He's the president and CEO of the Committee of 70, a good government group here in Philadelphia. David, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
I should add that the PPA is actually under the control of the state after a takeover about 15 years ago and has been a longtime bastion of political patronage, to quote my colleague Dave Davies. Mike, let me begin with you. As I said, you broke this story. Can you summarize what Fenerty was accused of?
Yes, well, it was two separate allegations that spanned a decade. The first allegation, which I wrote about, took place in 2015. It was filed by a senior official at the agency named – I didn't name her in the story, but she's since spoken publicly about it – named Sue Cornell. She alleged a two-year campaign of inappropriate kissing, touching, other lewd behavior. She didn't file a lawsuit. She wasn't seeking financial restitution. She simply told her HR person about it. The agency hired an independent investigator law firm who found that partly out of evidence and from witnesses and from Fenerty's his own admitted behavior that he had harassed a woman. But instead of firing him, the board, the six-member board of the parking authority, decided rather to have him pay for the investigation.
$30,000,
right? $30,000 investigation. They stripped him of many of the responsibilities that he was hired to do, hiring, firing, promoting, giving raises to senior officials, and silly, but crazy things for someone who runs a $243 million agency. He couldn't go on overnight trips and things like that. So they took that action, if you want to call it that. And when we confronted him, the board about it, they talked about his otherwise stellar career and reasoning why keeping him. And we obviously had great questions about that, what type of culture would allow this behavior to go on. And after we published
Especially by the executive director
of
the agency.
And it's such a, like I said, a huge, powerful, I think it's 1,100-person agency. So we had questions about what type of culture, workplace culture would allow this, and as soon as we published the first column, those questions were answered when the phones and my email lit up with tips from other employees. One of the people who called, who I talked to, was a woman who in 2006 filed a prepared a lawsuit to file against the agency. And what she alleged was just even more heinous. Behavior by Fenerty, as far as him unbuckling her bra at a work party and sitting on her lap and placing his tongue in her ear, really just heinous, disgusting stuff. The agency, we were able to confirm through documentation and other interviews her allegations, and the agency made her an offer, $150,000 offer, which she then refused, wishing to go back to work. And when we confronted the agency at that, at first they kind of stumbled around and then took the proper action that they should have took a decade ago very quickly and fired him. What was alarming, of course, was then their explanation that the board had been told of the 2006 allegation but had forgot.
But had forgot. Yeah. And that's a direct quote?
Yes, which is hard to believe, but yes, it is a direct quote.
And I should add that we did ask a representative from the board of the PPA to join us, and they did decline our invitation. Is there any way to know, Mike, just how many people knew at PPA about the actions, the sexual harassment by Vincent Fenerty?
Well, in the reporting that I did and in the documentation I was able to receive and the interviews I did, it was clear that both women had told supervisors, the 2006 woman, and just a a kind of side note of really what kind of culture that was at the PPA. She went to her supervisor, and instead of taking action, the supervisor bragged about having her own, a sexual relationship with Fennerty. So obviously, you know, this was the what was going on there. But yes, it was clear from the paperwork that that at least a few high-ranking individuals knew, and that other people would have. And this is also some reporting that my colleagues Julie Taruso and Trish Nadani and Claudia Vargas have done in today's paper, that there were other peripheral people at the agency who would have some knowledge, including State Representative John Taylor, who is an influential person at the authority, and the new co-executive chair, Rick Dixon, who had some peripheral knowledge, and the reporting shows that today. So it's there's a lot of questions of who knew what when.
Oh, I have a question. Why did the second woman that you interviewed, who is anonymous, why did she turn down $150,000?
Well, it's something that she regrets, to say the least, but she said, you know, I think it speaks to also just the patronage culture at the agency. She had worked there for a long time. This is what she knew. You know, she didn't know what really she kind of was scared of going forward. She said she felt pressure from individuals there, like, don't take the money and things will be better for you. And then she – part of the deal was that she would have to go work at the airport, which she and other parking authority people that I talked to look at that as sort of like a Siberia where they send folks, and she just didn't want to do that.
Let me turn to you. David Thornburg is head of the Committee of 70. What is your – I do want to talk about the history of the PPA, which is, of course, complicated and very interesting. But based on Mike's reporting and other people at the papers here in the city, what's your description analysis of the Philadelphia Parking Authority?
Well, it's hard to know where to begin. I mean, this incident just reveals a total and absolute breakdown in leadership, in governance, in accountability, in responsibility, just in basic principles of management. So then you start, you know, pulling the thread on the sweater, which gets us into this the long and tangled history of the parking authority, which we'll get to. But I mean, this is just. It's sad and pathetic and creepy and irresponsible and unaccountable and just leaves you feeling like there's just a total breakdown, as I said, of leadership and governance in this organization.
One of the members of the board talked about this, Mike, as puppy love. I mean, this was his description. And I have to say to our listeners, if you read in detail what Mike and others have written, is this is not puppy love. This is persistent sexual harassment.
Yeah, with the first woman, the 2015 claim, I didn't interview her. At that point, she wasn't ready to talk. Ronnie Polanski, the columnist of Daily News, did talk to her. And when you read what she describes in that column by Ronnie, the idea that anyone who had firsthand knowledge of those things could describe that as puppy love, who could describe any type of sexual harassment as puppy love, but what happened, what this woman described, it just speaks to really a misunderstanding or dismissiveness of what sexual harassment is and how it should be handled at that agency, and maybe in a wider workplace today, but it just really is mind-boggling that he could say that.
Well, we should add mm-hmm. that Sue Cornell, who did speak to Ronnie, was a state representative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's a Republican, and she served in the legislature.
Yeah, and the idea that in today's reporting that another state representative, John Taylor, and like I said, the executive director now, they in their own words tell the Inquirer today that, yeah, we knew about it and we had concerns about it. We asked him to stop. Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's not what you do.
I should say that we have called out to John Taylor's office, hoping mm-hmm. to get him to be part of our conversation during this hour, and I'm told that they're working on it, so hopefully we can get him in on the conversation. Yeah. I wonder to you, David, in terms of the agency itself, where does it go from here? I mean, these are black marks on the PPA.
Yeah, well, this is one of several problems that have been revealed about the PPA over the years. I mean, consistent concerns about patronage hiring, about bloated overhead and salaries, the tension and I think around the Uber and Lyft controversies, which are still flaring. It seems to me that it may be time to kind of go back to square one and thinking about, you know, if the parking authority should exist, if so, what should it do? And once we figure that out, who should run it, and how we pay for it, what responsibilities or obligations it owes to the city or the citizens or the state or whatever. Because this is just, Mike's and his colleagues have opened the lid on a snake pit that's been there for a long time.
Well, let's go back just 15 years when the state took over. It is called the Philadelphia Parking Authority, but it is essentially run by the state, by the legislature.
Well, yeah, and best as I can recall, I did a little homework on this, in 2004, 2005, on the heels of the creation of the School Reform Commission, which had happened a couple of years earlier, I think Republican legislators, particularly former Majority Leader John Purcell, was concerned that the city uphold its end of the funding bargain, that the city continue to put local dollars up towards public education. And it seems almost like in a fit of petulance, the Republican legislator took control of the parking authority away from the city and mandated that the parking authority make an annual contribution directly to the schools, and stack the deck on the board, and really kind of totally shifted the governance towards the. Mm. Towards the state, the governor, and the legislature.
And have they made those payments towards the school district? I think it's promised, $45 million a year, I think, was the
promise. It's interesting. I was looking at an article from the time when Purcell himself said they had made a mistake in that calculation. They had included revenues from the parking operations at the airport, which they legally couldn't obligate to the city or the school. So they took that off the table. So $45 million was never a real number, and I think even John Purcell acknowledged that. So it's turned out to be a kind of a up and down single digit million kind of contribution to the schools, which is not a huge amount of money in the context of the school budget, but you know every little bit counts. So it was a bad idea, I think, at the outset that just clearly hasn't met even those original expectations.
We're almost up at a break, Mike. Did you want to add something, or did you go,
Well, I think it's just – I think David's right. It's what these sexual harassment cases have showed. This is an agency that's failing at basic leadership but also at its commitments to the city, and that any type of audit or review that goes in there, obviously the sexual harassment claims would be at the forefront, but – what's happening at this agency? How is it, you know, failing to produce the numbers it said it would, and why is it failing at its commitments to the city?
That's Mike Newell. He's a columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, broke the story about the Philadelphia Parking Authority, allegations of sexual harassment leading to Vincent Fenerty, the CEO, resigning just recently. And he will get, as I mentioned in my introduction, a pension of almost $155,000. And it sounds like he did that right before the board was going to fire him. At least that's my reading of it. And David Thornburg with us as well, president and CEO of the Committee of 70, a good government group here in Philadelphia. You can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We're talking about scandal and reform at the PPA. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoing. Just to recap here, the executive director of the Philadelphia Parking Authority, Vincent J. Fenerty, has resigned after reports of sexual harassment came to light. And this scandal has raised some questions about competence and transparency at the agency. There are now calls for investigations and for major reforms. Talking about all of this with Mike Newell, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist, and David Thornburg, president and CEO of the Committee of 70. Mike, you said during the break, just to make sure, I always like to be as correct as I possibly can, is that Fenerty would have gotten his pension even if he had been fired. But
he would have, yes. But I think the question becomes if the board and the agency had taken the proper course of action and fired him 10 years ago, how much would that pension how less would that have been? I think he's got the highest pension in the city, so obviously undeservable.
Have you interviewed him?
We've reached out a lot. He gave he texted a quote to one of our political reporters just saying that there are two sides to every story.
But when you look at this investigation that was done that he had mm-hmm. to pay for, this $30,000 investigation, as you said, it seemed like he admitted to some of the behaviors he was accused of.
Yeah, they found him guilty of, or of committing the sexual harassment, partly, they said, on his own admitted behavior. So it really raises the question, if you have someone who's admitting to being a sexual harasser, well, then mm-hmm. why, you know, why, it's not puppy love. He shouldn't be there.
And what were all the justifications given by the board for what they did
or
didn't do?
Well, they were a kind of devolving list of justifications. First, it was that he was he had this stellar career and that he had no other black marks, and that, you know, in background or off the record conversations, it was, well, it wasn't that bad, or the councilman, it was puppy love. And then it became, well, we didn't know. We knew, and then we didn't know at first, and then, well, we did know, and we forgot. And that raises the question of, well, if you forgot, then that's one really horrible thing. And if you did know and didn't do anything, it's equally. So I really think they're in an untenable situation and have to explain themselves.
You're grimacing, David Thornburg.
Well, selective memory is convenient.
This is such an interesting agency, though, again, called the Philadelphia Parking Authority, run by the by Pennsylvania. How did it begin? I mean, this goes back, what, to the 1950s?
Yeah, I mean, I said to you on the break, this has a feel of like being a 1950s tract house. It was literally created in 1950. That's had additions bolted on and, new cathedral ceilings and a skylight and so forth. And it's totally unrecognizable from what it started out. It was originally created to finance the construction of parking garages. And this is back in the era where there was a huge concern that Center City and Philadelphia was losing its kind of retail economy, and we need to – parking is the key to bringing suburbanites back in the city and so forth. So it's a very 50s era vision that created it. And along the way, PPA, because it was there, I guess, picked up on-street parking, which used to be run by the city department. So now that gives them tickets and give them the ability to tow people and so forth and so on. And then I think most oddly, about 10 years ago, the PPA got the ability to regulate the taxi environment from the Public Utility Commission, and the Public Utility Commission regulates in every other part of the Commonwealth except Philadelphia. The logic being, I guess, that what they had in common was these are vehicles with four wheels, you know, whether they were parked or mobile, that made some logic. And I think that whole episode, and particularly as it relates to this, 21st century ride sharing, reveals a whole nother set of issues about PPA's capacity.
Which has to do with Uber and Lyft and trying to keep them out of the city.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very different kind of set of competencies and set of things you need to be good at in order to figure out what's the right balance to strike between the investment that taxi drivers have made in taxis and people's interest in getting around in a way that works for the environment, works for them, and actually encourages, kind of the growth of technology-oriented businesses. And it feels like PPA is totally ill-equipped to do that.
And when talking about this wildebeest has been created, was that a power grab, or was it just this sort of weird evolution of PPA?
Well, I think part of it was there was a logic that said taxis should be regulated locally, because what does Harrisburg know about taxis? There, people thought there are no taxis in Harrisburg. There's no taxis in the rest of the state. We should control our own destiny when it comes to taxis. But then, this latest wrinkle with the Uber and Lyft controversy, I think, starts to stress and strain that thinking. So, as I said, it may be time for kind of a fresh look at this whole set of functions and how well-equipped the PPA is to manage them.
Mike, in one of your columns, you say it's really time for the board to go. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that their explanations don't add up. Their handling of these complaints, their secrecy, their sexism in certain cases, their kind of flip-flopping on what they knew and didn't know. It just, like I said, either they truly forgot, or they did know and didn't do anything. And either one of those does not seem to me to be a board that should be in charge of this agency. And like as David said, they're obviously not a modern age, a modern agency when it comes to handling the serious issue of sexual harassment. And it, from what we're seeing, it doesn't seem like they're a modern agency mm-hmm. when it comes to carrying out their basic functions and responsibilities in the city.
And who appoints the board?
Go ahead,
David.
Appointed by the governor at the recommendation of the legislature. That's four mm-hmm. of the six seats. And they also serve for 10-year terms, which is really unusual. That will virtually guarantee that you will outlast the sitting mayor or the sitting governor who appoints them. So these are long-term governance arrangements.
I quoted my colleague Dave Davies, a long bastion of political patronage, and I wonder, David, when it was under the control of the city, we should say this is a largely Democratic city, and an agency largely, I guess, controlled by Republicans within the city, but when it was under the control of the Democrats or the city, was it clean as a whistle?
No. I think in all fairness, you know, there are very few places left in city government where patronage jobs are abundant and can be handed out. And Democrats and Republicans both like to take advantage of that. So maybe, you know, things were a little better here and there, but it's long been a plum for both parties.
What do you think the qualifications, since you have called for the board to go, Mike Newell, what do you think, though, then the qualifications for a new board member should be?
I think first that they would handle this better, but I think there needs to be first an understanding of what's happening at the agency, and then kind of we can work from there on who should be in charge of it or what type of leadership it needs. But I think again, I think these cases and everything David's talking about shows that the agency from the top down. We need to take a really hard look at it, not only at its leadership and its handling of these cases, but on how it's performing its basic duties to the city. And, you know, it is in this weird hinterland of a state agency and a city agency, and you know, is there proper eyes on it? It doesn't seem to be when we hear what's going on.
Yeah, David?
Well, there are other things you could do. I mean, you can write the rules of the board membership to exclude elected officials. Right now you've got a city councilman as vice chair. You've got the elected city controller on the board who happen to be Republicans. Ward leaders are elected officials, so they would be excluded from board membership. Or Vince Fennerty's been a ward leader since 1984. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's one thing you could do. And then, again, you can sort of take a look at the functions of the parking authority, and this would require state legislation. But, you know, it strikes me some of the taxi, Uber, Lyft issues are really about transportation mobility. You know, they don't have anything to do with parking and parking garages. So maybe an entity like a SEPTA or the Regional Planning Commission or the City Planning Commission. I mean, you know, the other thing you could do on the board, by the way, is require qualifications. You could have people who actually know something about planning, parking management, and so forth, rather than just, you know, hand these out to folks whose qualifications are purely political.
Are there qualifications right now?
Are there?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem to be.
I don't think so, yeah. But I don't know that for sure.
In the two cases that you wrote about, Mike, did these two women, did they go to their supervisors? Was there, I guess, a chain of reporting that seemed to at least allow them to describe their complaints and a way of at least processing
it? Yeah, there was. I mean, and the we'll start back in 2006, that woman went to her supervisor, and as I said, you know, in according to her allegations, the supervisor answered with her talking about her own her sex relationship with Fennerty. She did then, notify other people. She made the complaint. The woman in 2015, Sue Cornell, her own, I think, Richard Dixon, who was the head of HR, and Fennerty's friend, State Representative Taylor, they're both quoted in the paper saying, like I said, that we knew, we had concerns. So obviously it had reached the higher – this was a very visible thing happening. And I think what they say in the paper today was, you know, we told them – we tried to get them to stop, but they didn't, you know, take any action until the women took action of their own.
And what you were – or what they described to you was persistent. It wasn't just a kind of, you know, one incident and then that was it. This went on for months, even years.
Yeah, in both cases it was years. In Sue Cornell's case, and she described this in the Daily News column, was persistent for 2 years, and kissing and touching and too many comments and too many awkward workplace situations. The woman from 2006, you know, had very public workplace affairs in front of a lot of people, you know, him touching her and doing very lewd things. And so it speaks to, you know, sexual harassment isn't against one person, right, against all the other employees who see that behavior and think this is okay, this is permitted. You know, I think some of the things were at fundraisers for GOP right. officials. So there clearly wasn't on Fennerty's behalf any fear of committing this type of action that was alleged against them.
In fact, John Taylor, member of the legislature, is quoted as saying he saw Sue Cornell in these places where she probably shouldn't have been. It didn't seem like it was right that she was there, and he would approach her and say, "Are you okay?" And she kind of, you know, give him this look.
He said in today's article in the Inquirer that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said he had concerns about it, but he was a friend of Fennerty. He didn't see it at his place to really take action. I think he compared him to like a misbehaving child, like a parent talking to a misbehaving child, which is, and if the state representative calls in, he can explain it himself. But that again speaks to either a misunderstanding or complete dismissiveness of what sexual harassment is. If a woman is feeling completely uncomfortable and we're comparing that behavior to, you know, a misbehaving child.
We are talking about the Philadelphia Parking Authority, the fact that the executive director has resigned, accused of persistent acts of sexual harassment. Again, Mike Newell, columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, he broke this story. David Thornburg, president and CEO of the Committee of 70 here in Philadelphia. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. To join the conversation, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. An email from a Philadelphia listener: why does this sound like a carbon copy of the scandal at the Philadelphia Housing Authority and John Green? Is there any agency in town that works well? I was also thinking of Porngate, you know, just to sort of add another layer into our discussion. David?
Well, what those two have in common is they're both authorities. And, you know, without going into the, you know, 50-year history of public authorities, they're curious public entities that in a lot of ways are sheltered or removed from a solid chain of accountability. You know, that's what we're struggling with right now in terms of the parking authority. Who's responsible for this? Is it the legislature? It's not really the mayor. It's not his party. It's not his entity. Who do we blame? Who do we fire? Who do we ask to, you know, kind of start a new chapter on this? And that is the nature of authorities, again, without getting into the history. But
well, who provides oversight? I mean, who's the person that the agency?
Well, partly, I have to say, there's an interesting and probably not. There's the political story here is an interesting one. I mean, the Republican Party compared to even where it was 15 years ago is much weaker in the city. Registration's gone from like 4.5 to 1 to 7 to 1. And with the exception of John Taylor, who has been a good soldier for Philadelphia in the legislature, we don't have a strong voice in a Republican legislature in Harrisburg. It's the most Republican legislature since the early 70s. So exactly who we turn to even in the party and who's our messenger and our emissary is a tough question.
Have you talked to members of the legislature, Mike, about or gotten response from them to your stories?
My colleagues who have picked up on the reporting. Like I said, they've reached out to Representative Taylor and other folks about that, and are kind of pursuing what David said about really where does the accountability and authority come to who do they have to answer to, basically?
And are you still hearing from people?
Like I said, when I published the first two columns, it really got such an avalanche. To be expected, some of its stuff doesn't report out. But there are, you know, there was a lot of tips that came in about just different issues within the agency, which I and my colleagues are looking into.
I wonder to you, David, we're talking about an agency with a budget of, I believe, $243 million. Do they get most of their money from handing out tickets? Is that their main revenue generator?
You know, I can't cite the numbers to the dollar, but some combination of the parking fees that, you know, residents pay either for permits or the on-street parking, and then the fees that are associated with parking garages, and then also from the taxi industry, their annual inspection fees that come to the parking authority through that. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a mismatch of flows of dollars. I just say one thing. You know, there's a first rule in management that if you have bad outcomes, you probably have bad process. And we've got a terrible outcome here for the women that are involved in this and for the people of Philadelphia and so forth. And that should really urge us to take a look at the structure and the chain of decision-making. It's far beyond like a financial audit, which I think has been sort of thrown around here. So I just wanted to throw that point in there.
The Sue Cornell that you interviewed, and then she
didn't.
Ronnie did, but yep. Yeah, but you detailed her anonymously. She's now come out. Is she still at the PPA?
I believe so. Yes.
So working there.
Mm-hmm. The other woman does not work there anymore.
Uh huh. Uh huh. And she's the one that has not identified herself, you did not identify her as well. I wonder too to you, David. The agency has, I think, doubled in size since it was taken over by the state. Is that because it now includes all these other jobs?
You know, I haven't, just in doing some homework for this, I haven't really seen a solid explanation of why that's so. And it's also very top-heavy in terms of the management salaries. I can't remember the number, but, you know, seems like dozens of people making over $100,000 a year. Fennerty making more money than the mayor of Philadelphia, which doesn't exactly make a whole lot of sense. So, you know, there is a need to sort of open the books and see who's doing what and why and how much they're getting paid. But as I said earlier, I think it may also be an opportunity to really open up the whole mission and purpose and focus of the authority.
That's David Thornburg, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. We are talking about the Philadelphia Parking Authority. And again, he is president and CEO of the Committee of 70 here in Philadelphia. Mike Newell, a columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he broke the story about the PPA. And that's our conversation in this hour of Radio Times. We want to hear from you. What should be done to address the needed reforms at the Philadelphia Parking Authority? That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. And we got a lot of comments coming in. Radio Times at WHYY.org. Tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moskowain. Let me read a couple of comments here. A tweet from John: parking policy is a pretty important area of local transport policy. Doesn't it make sense for the streets department to control it? A tweet from Roger: my car got towed the other day. Will the PPA give me back my $175? Don't know the answer to that. A comment from Carol: it'd be harder for this type of abuse to flourish if there was a quota of women for each board of directors and management. So just kind of sense of what listeners are thinking about. Does it make sense, David, for the city to take back control of the PPA? Would that solve what it is we've been talking about, or just open up the patronage door to Democrats?
Well, maybe. It begs the question of exactly how we could execute that, but it might. I mean, there's a clear line of accountability if this is a mayoral department or the mayor had the majority authority to appoint the board. You know, there's another thing which I know the city of Chicago experimented with about 10 years ago, which is to basically sell the entire authority and privatize the function. They raised over $1 billion that they used, I think, put into a pension, write down their pension liabilities, which is a huge issue plaguing the city. And selling the parking garages has showed up from time to time in mayoral debates. And, you know, maybe it's time to revisit that possibility as well, which gets this whole thing out of the realm of patronage and politics and is more of a contractual kind of an arrangement.
Wonder what would happen concerning what happened with the Philadelphia Gas Works.
Well, yeah. We have a hard time climbing that hill.
Do,
that's for sure.
Let me get Alex from, looks like, Center City, Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Alex. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm an Uber driver in Philadelphia. And as your guests have mentioned, the PPA has been waging a long and relentless war on what's called rideshare. That's Uber and Lyft in Philadelphia. And you know, the PPA has been supporting the narrative that Uber drivers are unsafe, unvetted. You know, people question, is it safe for my daughter, for my wife to take an Uber? And I just want to point out the satisfying irony for us Uber drivers that turns out that, in fact, working for the PPA was what was, in fact, unsafe.
Wow. Based on what we've been talking about, Alex, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Well, Mike, anything you want to say in response to Alex's comment there?
Well, I definitely wouldn't want my wife and daughter working for Vince Vanity, so I'm very happy that he's no longer with the agency. But I think, as we've talked about, it doesn't stop with Vince Vanity, and there are a lot of hard questions for this board that need to be asked. And as David said, just a top-to-down audit or look at this agency.
Yeah. Well, and the state auditor apparently is looking into or going to look into the PPA.
Well, yeah, there's a little bit of a jump ball right now to see who's going to get to audit the but we've had audits before, I should point out. There was an audit from the city controller a few years back, and actually when he was running for city controller, Al Schmidt, who's now on the board, called for an audit and actually criticized the controller's audit. So, you know, I think that's helpful, but maybe necessary, but not totally sufficient.
Well, I think on the financial aspect, yes, an audit, but I mean as a review of just of what's going on of the management at this agency financially, but also just in a way of how they're handling themselves and what kind of transparency there needs to be there.
And to your caller,
Alex, thanks for the call. No, go ahead, David.
Yeah, to your caller's point, ride sharing is a fact of life in every city basically around the world. And so we've got to figure out a way to both treat the taxi drivers fairly, who invested sometimes their life savings in these medallions whose value has plummeted, but also recognize that, like, this is life in a big city now, is being able to use your smartphone to dial up a ride. And people don't care who does that. They just want, you know, service and cleanliness and, you know, a pleasant experience, particularly for younger folks. So let's just get over it.
Alex, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And you can call us as well, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And Mike, speaking of audits, I believe two city council members, Helen Gim and David O, called for an audit, I think, by city council. They got 5 votes, not enough for it to pass.
Enough, yeah.
And so what does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that there still isn't the political will, I guess, to go in there and look at it. That said, the governor, state attorney general, some candidates for attorney general have stepped up and said that they want to go in there and take a look. And I think, you know, like I said, financially it's important to make sure that they're fulfilling their commitments to the city, but more importantly, just open the doors wide on this agency and let's see what's going on, because every possibility has to be pursued here, from privatization to the city taking over, as David said, because obviously there's a lot going wrong at this place.
There's a little bit lost. We throw around this word audit like we all know what it is, and there are all different kinds of audits. There's a financial audit. There's a performance audit. There's a management audit. Seems to me what's called for is to deconstruct the decision-making that led to this terrible outcome and figure out who's to blame. It's much less about, you know, where the nickels and dimes are, and, you know, that's not unimportant, but this is a breakdown of leadership and accountability.
I think that's the first – I think what the is it the Art of the General that said – I think that's what the emphasis is going to be on, the sexual harassment complaints themselves, exactly what needs to be at the forefront.
Yeah. David, you mentioned what some other cities do. I mean, is Philadelphia, from what you know, a bit of an anomaly? So you have an agency within a city, but it's run by the legislature with the partisan differences.
Well, every city is alike and different. I think Philadelphia is quite different in the fact that the state controls our local parking authority. And then maybe not quite as different, the fact that the parking authority also has regulatory responsibility for taxis and ride sharing, which is sort of makes more sense at a state level or some kind of a regional level. I mean, it's ludicrous right now that, you know, if you're coming into the city from Bala Cynwyd, you can hail an Uber in Philadelphia, which is technically illegal. But once you cross the city avenue, it's all of a sudden legal. So that's just kind of a nonsense outcome. But, you know, there's no perfect governance process or structure here, but now's the time for us to be looking elsewhere.
And try to balance these competing interests and needs. Let me get Frank from, looks like Honeybrook, to join us. Hi, Frank. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. Let me preface this by saying I'm a former taxi driver from New York City. And I was thinking when you mentioned about the price of the medallions that they could maybe come up with a process where Uber or Lyft or whoever wants to get in on the ride sharing, float a bond or something and buy the medallions back from the cab drivers and then let everybody use Uber and Lyft, and the taxi drivers wouldn't be out that money.
Yeah, it's interesting. And these medallions cost so much
hundreds
money.
Of thousands of dollars, and they plummeted in value. And I'm sympathetic, and it's not unlike what, you know, the power industry went through when electricity was deregulated in Pennsylvania. There's actually we as ratepayers are paying a little bit in our bills every month to essentially recognize that, you know, they used to have a monopoly and now they don't anymore, and we have to sort of make them whole over time. So I think your caller's got an interesting idea.
Thanks for calling into Radio Times, Frank. Let me read a couple more comments. We've got email from Garrett. There are only two ways to evaluate the oversight of the board. If they weren't aware of the sexual harassment by the chief, they were criminally negligent. If they were aware, they were simply criminal. Sexual harassment is a crime.
Well, and I think exactly. And if you look at their devolving statements on how they handled this, you know, to say that they forgot, if that's the case, then they need to be held accountable for that. Mm-hmm. And to say, and I mean, if the inverse, if they, you know, they weren't told or they just, you know, didn't take action, then that's equally as abhorrible. So it really is a situation that they're in an untenable situation, I think.
And who's heading up the board since Finnerty's gone?
Well, the board was always controlled, I think, for the last like 15 or 20 years by Joseph Ashdow. And again, he has some very strong political ties to the Republican Party, obviously, but I think it's Purcell and some other folks. He hasn't, in the reporting the Inquirer did today, they reached out to him and he didn't respond.
We should
say that. To my understanding.
And Purcell seemed to be the person that wanted the state takeover.
Yeah,
he had his own problems.
Yeah, that's
say.
My recollection and my sort of research in preparing for this. And he's out of the picture, and I don't think is willing to comment on the situation.
And I think there is some of the reporting the Inquirer has done is there's been a kind of like somewhat of a power vacuum there too since Purcell has left. There have been, I think, Taylor and other folks who would be either people who would be the influential power brokers to step in. I don't know if they have kind of looked at it as we're not looking to take this over.
Let me read some more emails. Email from Thomas. Can your guest comment on today's topic with respect to the environment engendered by recent recordings leaked about Donald Trump? I was thinking about that in preparation. I mean, this is not your area of expertise, but here we are in 2016 dealing with sexual harassment, and even beyond that, sexual assault, or people talking about sexual assault in very public kinds of ways. David, your thoughts?
Well, it seems to me that the comment that this is just puppy love and the comment that this is just locker room talk is just totally outrageous and indefensible, because it is sexual harassment. We have to treat it that way.
Right. I think what the statements by Donald Trump obviously show, there are still people who think in power who think they own women's bodies, and what the situation at the parking authority shows that there's still agency thinks that it's okay for people to have that opinion. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really highlighting, both of them are highlighting the same issue at the same time.
The whole thing has got a Mad Men kind of a feel to it, you know, which again goes back to the sort
50s,
of 50s
right?
era of this is the way things are and it ain't the 50s anymore.
It really was when they started describing it as puppy love, you know, it just, when you read the allegations, not that it could ever describe it as puppy love, but when you read the allegations, it just speaks to like, wow, this is a complete misunderstanding of what this is.
Well, and you talked about some of the things, and not to get overly graphic here, but I mean, we're in a time when I think it's important to really understand what we're talking about. You talked about Kennedy sticking his ear down her throat, or down her ear, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there was the 2006 situation really was like a predatory situation and a humiliating one, obviously, and so was the 2015 one, but at work parties, sneaking up behind her and unhooking her bra, another time trying to pull her blouse down. These are the allegations that the authority made the settlement offer on. Too many lewd comments to say aloud.
About sex and things like
that. Yeah, she needed to have more of it and stuff like this. Just really disgusting behavior and behavior that seemed to be, that he wasn't afraid of doing it, which speaks a lot of just the entire situation and the context of the conversation.
Let me just say one thing. I mean, this look at the Parking Authority and what they do and how it's governed and so forth. I mean, this is a core issue that affects the city of Philadelphia and the people here and the businesses here. So I would hope – I know the mayor doesn't have a whole lot of cards to play, but I would hope he steps forward on this issue and does what he can to try to correct the obvious flaws that we found. Because this is, first and foremost, again, this is an issue that affects the people of Philadelphia and people who live here, people that work here, and therefore our future.
What do you want him to say or do? Or what can he say or do?
It could be, he's got to play the political cards he has to, my thought is to like let's take a good hard look at what let's open the book. Let's on the functions of the authority, how it's staffed, how it's structured, and you can involve legislative leadership, you can involve business leadership, and so forth. But it's at the end of the day, this is our issue.
To David's point, I think what's clear about this whole situation, other than how badly it was handled, was that no action was going to be taken until it became public. So I think the mayor and all of us have an obligation to make sure that everything becomes public now. And it just doesn't stop with the firing of someone who should have been fired a decade ago and maybe a board member who resigns. If that's the case, then we failed and it really just doesn't go enough.
Let me get one more caller. And this is Ronald from West Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Ronald, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. We the taxi drivers, we've been saying this for years that the PPA – need some oversight. But our biggest concern is while they are patronage haven, they're supposed to have a city mission, but they're doing so much patronage. I mean, their staff is just ballooning. The taxi industry, for example, the PUC had 10 employees doing the taxi work. These guys have over 50 people, 6 of them lawyers, and 50% of them are managers. And we have to find a way of controlling them just hiring their nephews, their nieces, their cousins, they can't get a job. How do we go about that?
Well, it's really an important question, Ronald. We're talking about patronage, and as we know, David, patronage can lead to people being hired who never should or ever be hired for certain positions.
Yeah, and again, you can build into the governing documents requirements and qualifications and so forth that will minimize that. At the end of the day, this is still a leadership question. This is a question of the responsible parties coming together and say, this is how we're going to run this organization. These are the kind of people we need, and then execute on that over time. The governance stuff can help, but at the end of the day, you need the will to step forward and say, this is not right, and it's got to be better.
Mike, we're almost out of time here. I'm going to give you the final word. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, like I said, I think it would be a really I wouldn't say opportunity, but it would be a really sad thing if we don't use this as an opportunity to go in there and really figure out and to correct this authority.
Mike Newell, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. Columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, again, broke this story about the Philadelphia Parking Authority. David Thornburg, thank you for joining us as well. He's the president and CEO of the Committee of 70, and we did ask a representative from the board of the PPA to join us, and they declined our invitation. Lots of comments here I didn't get to. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can download a podcast of the show. You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. Sign up for a newsletter and listen to us on satellite radio. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us.